Probably smells like coffee. Oh, hey. Hello, no, well, folks.
That's just you that smells like coffee.
You damn right I do.
Coffee and shame.
Coffee and hate. Good afternoon, folks. This is Walt. And today on the Banff Podcast, we are talking Spider-Man Far From Home. Today we have a nice shirt, Brandon. Tonight we have a star-studded panel who is going to dazzle, daze, and mystify us on their take on Spider-Man. And starting from my left, going to my right, because that's the way we always seem to do it, we have Alice first up. How are you?
Hi, I'm great.
And Brandon next, obviously painting minis.
No, I'm just clipping them out in my Shadows of Rimstone minis, so dual tasking, but it's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me, as always.
Groovy. Dr. Comics, Jason Tondro.
Hey, man. So far, it's a good day. I actually got to interview Jonathan Tweet this morning.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be on our podcast. So, like, little plug for another episode of Banff. Yeah, Jonathan Tweet lives here in Seattle. Yes. And so he graciously invited me over to his house. And so we chatted for an hour about his latest games, Over the Edge, the new edition of that, and this amazing children's book he wrote about how to teach evolution to preschoolers, called Grandmother Fish, and all kinds of other amazing stuff. So anyway, so that was just this morning. So I'm still like super stoked on that.
That's awesome. Fantastic. And what are your secrets for an elegantly trimmed beard, which I am just man crushing on right now?
So you're gonna laugh at me, but beard oil.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's just like a and I have a little comb.
Right on. And
you know, if you guys are into the comedy group Found Footage Festival, these are guys, if you're not familiar with them, they go to flea markets and stuff and find old weird videotapes, and they do stand-up comedy based on it. They do a lot of stuff from like public access shows, and one of their great side things is they made their own fake public access show. It was called Talking Beards.
That's awesome.
That was us right there.
And in the sample episode, Chris Elliott from the old David Letterman show comes on and talks about the challenges of being a bearded celebrity in today's market.
That's awesome.
Well, here in today's market, as long as you got skinny jeans, it's okay. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor Mayhem, Christopher McLaughlin of Ghost Show Press. How are you, sir?
I'm just got up, so I'm winning.
Good to be in the summer.
Oh God, yes, and I'm halfway through the final editing pass on a completed draft of a book. So yes, about to take that victory lap.
Fantastic. So Alice, take it away.
Okay. So
no pressure. Only like 5,000 people watching you. It's fine.
Walt just wants to get me on the yips again. I swear. Well, I actually really enjoyed Spider-Man. I think that there were things that they did very, very well, and things that they did equally badly is the problem. Things that they did really well, in my opinion, spoiler review, they actually used they actually used things that were out of the comics that I have not seen in any other Spider-Man movie before. One was the fact that they actually used his brains beyond just making his little spider shooter gadgets, but you saw him make gadgets when he ran out of spider webs. You saw him actually building stuff. I'm not going to get into what, so that I'm not ruining everything for people, but it was really nice to see that he actually got to use his gadgeteering pool that he would have on his character sheet. sorry, I relate everything back to gaming.
That's all right.
I also... another thing that I loved, I loved the fact that they showed that his spidey senses were able to do more than just, oh, there's danger within a 15-foot radius of me. Because in every other movie, all they showed the danger sense being able to do, the spidey sense being able to do is, oh, something's around. And the fact that they actually accessed the full power of that actually made me really, really happy. This is not about the movie itself, but something about everything I'm seeing online from my friends posting, and it's a little bit irking. Everyone, including like Screen Rant, has these articles up about, oh my gosh, they finally revealed MCU Earth 616. They actually didn't. If you stopped in like the first hour of the movie, probably, because I don't know when the scene is, but the bad guy literally admits that so-and-so made bleep up. Make this preposterous story about multiple planets and blah, 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 blah. Made all this stuff up. And so I was just BSing as hard as I could, and everyone bought it. Therefore,
did anybody else get a Watchmen callback there?
On which part?
Which part?
When they're talking about how they made up this ridiculous story to fool the masses,
yes,
to believing something.
Yeah, and that's exactly the scene I'm talking about.
Yeah,
it just felt like a Mysterio to me. But I'll throw in my two cents. Sure.
That felt very resonant of Watchmen, or I guess I should say the Outer Limits episode that Alan Moore stole the ending of Watchmen from.
Well, for Mysterio, I loved the guy that played Mysterio. I loved the way he did
it. Jake Gyllenhaal.
Thank you. I am not a fan of that bar scene. The first part of the bar scene was cool. The reveal, I think, was a little too over the top. I think that took a little bit, stepped a bit past where Mysterio would be. He is almost to that point, but I think they just went a little over the hill on that for me. And that kind of made me groan for a couple seconds while I'm like, oh gosh, I can't believe they're really doing it that way. Because it was just a little too... It didn't line up with the rest of the movie. It was very, very jarring. But yeah, those are my early comments. I'll let other people talk for a while.
Who's next? Brandon?
Sure. So I missed the bar scene because I had just come off of a 12-hour shift and had not been... had not slept great the night before. So I did miss that part. Alice has filled me in. And the way she described it, it sounds actually, in my head, the movie that I've got from her description is fantastic. She says that it was a down point. I really loved the movie. I thought it was super well done. I thought that Happy was a little creepy. He's picking up Tony's scraps. It really felt like, or what Tony wanted to be his. And going into it, there were parts I knew I was not going to like, and that was Mary Jane. I just don't like the interpretation that this universe has decided to go with for the Mary Jane character.
Yeah, her name is MJ. I don't even remember her real name
Michelle.
Is. It's not, yeah, but it's not Mary Jane, so they changed it enough. It's MJ. She's supposed to be their version of Mary Jane, but she is Michelle something. And I stand with Brandon. I like that actress. I like Zendaya. I've watched a number of things with her. I cannot stand her as MJ.
And that's nothing. That's not her fault at all.
No,
that's
it's not.
A director and
writing,
scripting, mm-hmm. On the way that they wanted to pursue that character. I have seen her only in a few stuff, so I'm indifferent to the actress. But I don't have a problem if they wanted to recast. Though I do think that Mary Jane's got a very iconic look that I would have loved to see the Marvel Cinematic. What I want to say, though, is let's go back 20 years and, you know, Sam Raimi is pitching Spider-Man.
Sure.
And just the amount of laughter that if anybody said, let's try and do Mysterio as a villain in like a real universe where we have people, it's not just cartoons, we're trying to be a serious approach. And just the amount of laughter that this kind of comment would have triggered, and how wonderful Jake Gyllenhaal did with that Mysterio character, the scripting behind it, giving him a specific motivation, and as well as these fantastic scenes that I think are better than any comic that I've seen on where Mysterio is doing his special effects. When he's got Spider-Man in his thrall, I was just eating that up and was, you know, so enthralled by what they did with that and thought that was fantastic. There's so many good things about the movie, but that was the real high watermark to me.
Well, isn't that the same kind of comments that people were making about Iron Man back in the day? Like, you're not going to make an Iron Man movie. This is going to suck.
Yep,
and then...
I literally just listened to one of the BAMP podcasts where you guys, Guardians of the Galaxy has already been announced, and everybody on the panel was saying, this is going to be a failure because I cannot see a talking raccoon and a tree being accepted in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so just listening to that, you know, 10 years later almost, I thought that was a funny, funny comment to hear.
So the rest of all of you listening to this podcast, please ignore everything we're about to say.
It's still entertaining, even if it's preposterous, that what we say.
Yeah. All right, hit us up, Jason.
Well, you guys are.
What's the analytical angle?
Well, I enjoyed the film very much. I did get a certain perverse pleasure out of this movie. Because like Alice, I saw all of these articles. The one I read came from IO9 saying, oh, Spider-Man Far From Home blows the Marvel Universe wide open and it reveals there's a multiverse and there's all these other worlds out there. And is that how we're going to get the Loki television series? Because we saw him die in the Avengers. And is this how we're going to get Vision back for the WandaVision television series? Because they're just going to get like another world's version of these characters. And now we're going to have all these crossover potentials. And I'm like, did anybody read this is a movie about Mysterio? Like, didn't anybody... Like, did you all? One of two things happened. Either all of these media sites got so carried away on trying to overanalyze the trailer that they forgot it was a movie about Mysterio, and they actually believed all the stuff they were writing, or they were all in on the joke where they were trying to convince the public that Mysterio's line was true when everybody that was actually writing these articles knew that it was false. All I can say is that I never believed for a minute that Mysterio was anything other than a special effects guru. I mean, of course he is. That's the movie. Anyway, so the bar scene where he reveals his team, and I loved that bit. And I thought that his origin as a disgruntled Stark employee is classic, because I mean, how a ton of Iron Man's villains are all disgruntled Stark employees. Like, that is classic.
Well, I think technically speaking, more commonly, like somebody Stark has run out of business. But yes, definitely in the same ballpark.
And I love that they got the actor who said, I know Tony Stark, back 10 years later to play the same guy. because that exchange, like, Tony Stark built this in a cave with scraps, is one of the most famous moments of that movie. And maybe right? One most quotable bits of the whole Marvel Universe.
And barf. Come on. The fact that they showed the barf part, that was cool.
I actually had forgotten that. Is that what film is that from?
Civil War.
So at the beginning, you know, Stark, before everything starts, Stark is doing a panel, and this is the panel that he's giving right before he walks out into the hall, and the woman accosts him and says, you know, you superheroes need to be taken accountable for what you do. But the panel that he's doing and the presentation is of him in that room doing barf and the guy behind. Yeah.
A scene with his father that he yep. was role playing out for therapy.
Yes, that one.
Well, so I liked the film. I thought Mysterio was done really great. I thought that the happy Aunt May romance was interesting and funny. I like that they have swapped out the responsibility of Uncle Ben for the responsibility of Tony Stark. It's certainly a different take. And that one of the things about there having been so many different Spider-Man movies in the last 10 years is that I no longer see any of them as necessarily canonical, right? Like, it's just another person's riff on a popular character. It's someone else's cover of a classic song. And so I don't need it to be my personal MJ or my personal Aunt May or even Uncle Ben anymore. Like, it's just like people with a whole lot of money and some pretty good talent are doing their version of Spider-Man, and it's pretty fun. I like it. I did find it pretty interesting that Betty looked like Gwen Stacy,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, mm-hmm. they put the black headband and the straight blonde hair, and they're and I'm not really sure what was up with that. Like, was that like just an Easter egg for fans, or like of all the looks they could have given Betty Brand, why did they choose to make her look like Gwen Stacy?
Well, I think that given the mid-credit scene, I think that she might come back as their new version of Gwen Stacy.
Well, maybe.
I mean, they redid MJ.
What's that?
They redid MJ completely.
Yeah, they absolutely did. Gosh, what else? The Mysterio plotline I also thought was fun, because it was a good mirror image of Spider-Man. You know, the last Spider-Man film, we had the Vulture, right? We had Michael Keaton. And Michael Keaton's character was in many ways very sympathetic to Peter in the sense that they had the same values. They were, you know, they were the local hero, right? And this is the lesson that Peter learns in that movie, is that he should just be the local hero and he doesn't need to be saving the world. In this movie, we had the mirror image. So instead of Peter, who's a world-saving hero but wants to be the local guy, he wants to be the nobody. Instead, we had a nobody who aspires to be the world-famous superhero, right? There was some commentary going on. I think I read Kurt Busiek's timeline, and he was talking about how fans were saying that we should do Thunderbolts now in the Marvel Universe, because now that the Avengers are all gone, we've created this huge opening for the Thunderbolts plotline. But you can't do Thunderbolts now because everybody will think you're just copying Mysterio. Right? You know, that plotline, the plotline of the person who pretends to be a superhero, sets up their own villain so that they can defeat that villain and be a hero. I mean, that's one of the great old plot lines of comics. I mean, that goes back at least to like Hank Pym, and I'm sure Christopher could think of many Silver Age or even Golden Age versions of the plot line. And I was in kind of like fan heaven watching some of these classic, wonderful plot lines get played out for a new generation of fans who've never seen a villain pretend to be a hero and create his own villain so that he could defeat it before. I really enjoyed the film. I loved it, and didn't really see any glaring weak spots for me. The end credit scenes, well, I'm sure we'll talk about. We've spoiled everything else for this movie. So, I was glad to see Jonah back. I wanted him to have the hair, the flat top hair that he had before. But that's all right. I'll take what I can get, and. But I was a little surprised that they chose to reveal Peter's identity. I'm not really sure where they'll go with that. Like, will they try to cover it up somehow? Or, I mean, I don't think they really can. It's a big change in the status quo. When you're doing a movie every couple of years, you can do that. You can make big changes. Yeah.
Well, okay. So I wanted to respond to two things you said. Sure. One, we'll go with the most recent one first. They are trying to mirror Tony Stark.
Right.
So if they're trying to mirror Tony Stark in just about every fashion, his identity has to be revealed, because that would be the proper mirror to the journey of Tony Stark in the MCU universe.
With a big difference,
the public ID hero.
With the big difference being that Tony did it on purpose.
Yep. Yeah, but you know but again, the child wanting to be is still trying to live up to that and trying to be that, and so they're trying to. Being that they're trying to mirror him, I think that their option right now is to redeem the character and then be the public hero figure. Yeah. So, and they hint at that with certain cut scenes that ended up certain scenes that didn't make it into the movie, but were very much on the trailer that aired a week after and destroyed a bunch of people's minds, which is, oh, are you going to be the next Tony Stark? Are you going to be the next Iron Man? And they do that repeatedly in the movie as well. Yeah. And to do that, you know, if he's going to take over Stark Industries, which they're already lining him up for because they already gave him the tech, they gave him all the access in the ship. They're showing you he has access to all of it. Yeah. Then he needs to have the ability to have public ID, and this is their route to that. The other thing I wanted to say to you is I love that you agree with me on the fact that it's absolute BS. He says it's BS, and the fact that everyone, for some reason, seems to be brainwashed on the mind of this joke because they either didn't actually know the character, didn't know the actual movie, or something is wrong here. Problem with that is you and I are going to be right for as long as it takes for Marvel Studios to decide, hey, since everyone thinks this way, let's just say we did it on purpose and let's just run with it because everyone seems to love this idea. So we'll just say, yes, we did that on purpose and change it and say that the BS was the BS and the fake out.
I don't know, because I didn't ever end up seeing Ant-Man crawl up Thanos' behind and explode him from the inside. And that seemed to be the fan popular theory of how Endgame was going to go.
There's an image I'm not going to be able
to. But that was after Endgame came out, Brandon.
No, it was not. It was not. I had seen that for quite a long time before Endgame ever came out.
Okay.
Christopher, what do you think?
Yeah, Christopher.
Well, I was very, very, very happy that the main thing that I loved about Homecoming continued into this sequel, and they expanded upon it. Because to me, I think the great, 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 great genius of the Spider-Man movies, the current crop, and I think in many ways maybe the most genius of any of Marvel's various franchises, is that rather than do this slavish recreation of the actual comics, they've opted to go after the emotional truth of them. And I think that's what has, you know, that's what's made this probably my favorite of all the Marvel franchises. You know, there was a moment in Homecoming where, he's talking to like the helpful AI inside his suit. And, you know, it's got drones and stuff like that. And I remember a lot of people grousing about that online. And I started thinking, no, what you don't understand is this take on the character is focusing on him as a high school student.
Right.
You know, having been in public education for the last 25 years, I don't think a lot of people appreciate how if this high school student didn't have an Alexa in his suit and access to drones, they wouldn't have known who the hell this character was.
Yeah, totally.
And little things like the fact that the Daily Bugle is now like this whack job conspiracy theory website rather than a newspaper.
Yeah.
Again, brilliant. You put a newspaper in this movie, and anybody below the age, anybody Peter's actual age is going, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
As far as this take of MJ, and this is where I will put myself at risk of being a victim of defective induction. But okay, I have known. I mean, I my classes basically look like Peter's. Okay, you know, they're incredibly diverse. They, you know, I recognize all of Peter's friends in all my classes. I've had a Peter in every single one of my classes. He always falls for a girl like MJ. You know, the nerdy, awkward kid always goes for the dark, outspoken girl. You know, dark in the sense of outlook on life. Yeah. You know, and really, again, it may be defective induction that seems to be very popular these days. But honestly, you know, I mean, I look at that characterization, which I think, this girl is in my class every year, and she always has a Peter chasing her. To me, there was an emotional truth there. Again, it may be a highly subjective one, but it's like, yeah, this is kind of where we're at these days.
Well,
I really believe that more than an MJ that is, you know, that like in the comics, or the characterization, the one from the Raimi films that they never quite seemed to settle on. She just seemed to be doing whatever she needed to advance Peter's story. Mm-hmm. You know, I much prefer this take on the character, and again, you know, just an amazingly satisfying film. I mean, to me, the best part of the Marvel films are what I like to call their July films. They always, you know, I mean, I'm on break, and they always, at least when they're reading my mind, they'll always slot in like a Spider-Man or an Ant-Man or a Guardians film around that time. And I'm like, yeah, just give me something that's a hell of a lot of fun. And, you know, I can sit there and enjoy the fact that when this movie's over, I can go up and stay up another 8 hours and write if I want to.
Yeah.
And it just hit all the right emotional buttons. And hey, God bless them for being true to the cinematic universe rather than the comics. I know there are a lot of people that are upset about how this is about, you know, this, you know, it's got all these, you know, now the Spider-Man elements are mixed in with Iron Man. Well, you know, that's being true to the cinematic universe rather than the comics.
Well, honestly, I think that
was the right decision.
Also, I mean, like Superior Spider-Man, I think is the TV show where that is exactly, it starts off with Iron Man recruiting him, with Nick Fury recruiting him, and then, you know, getting hooked up with all that. Sorry.
Thank you for mentioning Nick Fury. The unless they have like really, 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 really much bigger plans than I ever would have imagined for this whole Nick Fury and the Skrulls thing, that whole, you know, it wasn't really Nick Fury. That just seemed to be a long walk for a joke that it was funny, but that just, it just seemed to be distracting. I mean, one of the really pleasant things about this movie for me was that they didn't go with all this parallel Earths nonsense.
Yeah.
I was really, really, really worried that would be a thing. And I'm so glad they didn't, because anytime you can simplify a comic book, yeah, God bless you. You should go ahead and do that. Yeah. But, you know, the whole, it wasn't really Fury. I didn't think it was that funny. I didn't think it was that necessary. It just seemed really distracting. It may lead to bigger things down the road. Everything seems to, but it didn't strike me as being, it just struck me as ending a really great movie on a,
Yeah. I think actually you talking about the fact that a lot of people were arguing that it didn't stick with a lot of Spider-Mans. I think that those are a lot of people that that don't have a very long history. I'm not saying that it's true for everyone, but I feel personally that this movie has a lot more, as far as emotional and intellectual basis on the actual character himself, pulled a lot more from the comics than previous movies, because previous movies, they really didn't show his intelligence. And so a lot of people don't know much about the character, it feels like, because they talk, they talk about the fact that, you know, Spider-Man is just a kid who happens to be strong as a spider and got bit by a radioactive spider. But how did he get bit by the spider? He was in a lab. He was doing stuff that he shouldn't be as just a kid, because he is a super smart kid he's a little walking genius who wanted to be in biochemistry, wanted to be in technology. And the fact that they actually show his gadget pool in this one was magnificent, because they never showed him to have a real gadget pool in any other movie. So that to me showed more of the character than they have in a while. And same with the spider sense. A lot of people think that the spider sense can just say, oh, there's a fight sometime, there's some sort of danger nearby, now I need to look around. But he can focus in and harness it a lot more. And the comic has shown that repeatedly. And so I'm so glad that they actually harnessed that for the movie. But I think that in regards to your comment on the universe, you know, not being a multiverse thing, I did like that it was an intentional mockery of, we're not going to go the direction of all this multiverse and trying to keep it straight for everybody, because it's just going to hurt our heads. And I think that the big speech about it being a preposterous notion, but people bought it, and that it's, you know, this multiverse preposterous notion, that story really speaks to that mockery.
But really, I don't know that I've had more fun at the other than the weird revival screenings I go to. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've had more fun in a movie all year, and I probably won't have more fun in a movie all year than this.
That's
really
awesome.
An extremely extremely perfect film for what it was, and I really, you know, I may go see it again. And I'm not really big on repeat viewings of modern films, but yeah, I may go see this one again.
That's awesome. Okay, Walt, what do you think?
Well, I haven't seen it yet.
I was waiting for that.
I know. I had to line them up for that.
No, I'm probably going to go see it in the next couple of days.
Ruined it for you.
No, I've been reading Spider-Man for 30 years. You're not going to ruin anything for me, right? But I mean, the thing I like about what you guys are talking about is the fact that you're seeing a lot more gadgets and stuff, because I remember I used to love, we used to get this station from the affiliate in Boston. It was Channel 38, WLTV, I think is something like that. But on Saturdays they had, and Sundays they had Kung Fu Action Theater. But on during the week, they had all these crazy cartoons. And it was the greatest thing to come home. And it was a great way to learn English. Because, you know, I was watching the Spider-Man. Mama, look, I'm watching the Spider-Man, you know, with my crazy accent, trying to speak like Spider-Man was. But I thought it was the greatest thing ever, because, like, you know, my family was in the automotive business. They did like car recovery and auto body repair. So like when they had a flashlight, it was this long, you know. And I remember in that cartoon, Spider-Man would like press his belt and it would have like a belt flashlight. I'm like, imagine if you could fit a flashlight on your belt. And now we have cell phones that do that.
And we just have little LED lights on the keychain.
Yeah. I mean, just in this room alone, I have like three drones. I mean, you know, to have stuff like that and be able to, we need to take the next step, because all the James Bond stuff that we thought were cool back in the day, we have.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I can't cut doors with it, but I have a laser pointer for my blind cat. You know what I mean? We have all this crazy technology that has been miniaturized to the point of, you know, well, I don't need Jarvis. I got that bitch right here. Yeah. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff.
This is a great sort of teenage romance film too. Like, there were a lot of classic teenage romance bits in it. It's a great date movie. And I mean, you know, it's set in Venice and all kinds of other fantastic European locations. It's
was something I also really did like, that they went to a few different places that the Marvel Universe doesn't hit all that often.
At its heart, this movie is a romance about Pete and MJ, and mm-hmm. They did a wonderful job. I'm a sucker for that kind of movie. As I have said for many, many years, all you have to do to get me to like a movie is make a movie in which the smart guy gets the girl, and I am so. And so, you know, a good Spider-Man film, that's pretty much all that it takes. So, yeah, I think it's a great film. It's a film to watch with your plus one, definitely.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of characters that I immediately recognize in my real life, the two teachers chaperoning the trip.
Yes.
I think you could probably like divide every teacher in America into like one of those two archetypes.
By the way, if you really like that, if you thought that idea of the Daily Bugle website was cool, that idea is actually in the PS4 Spider-Man game where Jonah comes on as this like radio host constantly with conspiracy ideas, and it's shot for shot straight like what we get in the movie.
I was happy to see him back as JJJ because I thought that he was really awesome back in the Sam Raimi
one. I mean, he's totally slumming now because, let's be honest, Simmons is an amazing actor. He's like Academy Award winner and stuff. So he could be doing anything in the world. But the fact that they got him to come back and play Jameson again for a cameo was pretty great.
I thought that the fact that they closed the movie with the identity reveal rather than open a movie with that kind of aspect was interesting, because now, like you say, it's going to be a couple of years before we see our next Spider-Man.
Well, technically, so they close it with all that Nick Fury skull bit.
Right, right. Yeah. Which mm-hmm. which I have to presume, although I know, Christopher, you probably haven't read this series, and neither have I, but that it's a lead into the Secret Wars plot line with all
Secret Invasion, you mean?
Secret Invasion, wherever.
You know, I've read that, but I don't buy it. I mean, yeah. To me, it just seems like this overly elaborate joke of how far Nick Fury has to go to take a vacation. The Skrulls are officially part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They're the stand-in for they're the stand for every migrant refugee population in the galaxy. They're not gonna take their cinematic stand-ins for the adorable kids in cages down the southwestern United States and turn them into the mega villains. That's a bad look. You don't do that.
Right.
Yeah, I think actually it's more the lead into the next Captain Marvel, especially since, you know, you don't invoke her name at one point is stated by the Skrull version of
We know that that's a Skrull saying that instead of
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because when you realize it's a Skrull saying "don't invoke her name," you know it's like there's a lot more to it. When it's just Nick Fury saying it, you're kind of like, okay, he's being snarky. But when the Skrull says it, you're like, oh. So I think that that's the lead-in for the next Captain Marvel.
We'll see. Yeah.
But my honest biggest disappointment has actually nothing to do with the movie, but I try and avoid all previews. I caught a tiny bit on the screen when Alice and I were walking into a different movie.
Yeah.
And so I thought Hydro Man was also going to be in the movie, and I was so excited to see Hydro Man. And so
Spider-Man's got some great bizarre villains. Like, he's got just a wonderful lineup of bad guys. Many of which are incredibly goofy. So,
well, you know, one of the many, many pleasures of seeing this at Alamo Drafthouse was, they're always fabulous pre-shows. They included like a little video essay about Spider-Man's most bizarre villains.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there thinking like, all right, how much homework has this guy done? Is he going to include the Hypno Hustler? Starting with the Hypno Hustler. Like, yes, yes. This is why I won't see a movie anywhere else.
What, who else? Who are we missing? Like, who should we get for the next crazy?
Kraven.
Who?
Kraven the Hunter.
Kraven. Oh, Kraven's a great character. Yeah.
Tom Holland is pushing for Jason Momoa to play Kraven.
Oh my God! Sorry.
and as I was explaining, as I was telling my wife earlier this week, okay, because Craven's whole thing is that while he was over in Africa, he learned all these like special fighting techniques and all this like funky native medicine. Yeah. You know, great opportunity to have a Black Panther tie-in.
Oh right, yeah.
Oh hell yeah! Oh, that would be so cool. Spider-Man and Black Panther on the same. Hmm. Oh yeah.
You rang my bell. No. You're right. Craven would be a great choice. And if they did a picture with Craven and he didn't die, that would set up Craven's Last Hunt, which is a great picture.
Do you think they also might try and dip into the whole clone saga as well?
God no. Please.
Craven's Last Hunt, which is the best Craven story ever written.
That's back in like 86, 87, right?
It doesn't work as a launch of the character. Like, you can't use that story unless Craven's already had his ass kicked by Spider-Man before and feels the need to redeem himself. It's probably not a good movie choice, but I just love that story so much.
While they didn't actually bring in some of the other villains, they did at least throw homage to like Hydro Man, where they're reading out of the tabloid about, hey, there's this guy. And you're like, yeah, just zip your lip and just keep watching. So it wasn't actually, you know, they didn't actually bring Hydro Man in, but it was cool to kind of throw Hydro Man a bone. For people who does understand,
and how nicely that fit into the head into the subtext of the movie about this whole movie being about internet bullshit.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And as to the identity reveal, I mean, the first movie absolutely gives us that because the closer with Vulture
right.
is that he refuses to reveal that identity, even though he also found out about it.
That's right.
So now we have two Spider-Man villains, one of which found out and made the choice not to. Mm-hmm. The next villain has to make the choice to reveal.
Well, and realize they really did fake people out on who Mysterio is in the end, if you think about it, because at this point, they made it basically show you that the engineer that was wronged was just the puppet master the whole time. And while he was following somebody else's orders, oh, look, that guy's dead. Oh, well, he was just my figurehead.
Is he dead, though?
That's true. Is he dead? The question is he dead? But you saw him, but you did see the engineer download the bunch of stuff right before at the end and then go and release it. So, you know, at this point, there could be this double fake out because no matter what, you still have Mysterio alive, whether it's in the form in the costume or that he needs to rebuild that image, whether one character or another. And I really liked that duality of the possible double fake out.
Yeah, Mysterio is still usable as a villain, even though Jake Gyllenhaal's character is dead.
If he is dead or not. But yeah, even if the Jake Gyllenhaal character turned out to be dead, he could build the hologram of Jake Gyllenhaal, and he could still have Mysterio because that engineer clearly was the brains of it all, the way they showed it at the very last moment.
All right, fun bit of forgotten trivia. Mm-hmm. Do you know, technically speaking, this film actually had two Spider-Men in it?
Yes, I do.
Yes,
the other one is from the black and white suit from the noir.
No, not what I'm talking about. No. Okay. No, what a lot of people have forgotten is that Jake Gyllenhaal was Spider-Man for like 3 days.
How so?
When they were making the second Raimi Spider-Man movie,
yes.
Depending on who you ask, Tobey Maguire either got hurt while shooting Seabiscuit, or he came back on the set and was such a total insufferable dick, Raimi refused to work with him and fired him. But whatever combination of that is the truth, for 3 days, Jake Gyllenhaal was brought in to be Spider-Man for the second one until Tobey Maguire recovered, learned his lesson, whatnot.
That's been, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought the whole Night Monkey gag was hilarious.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
He's fake.
He's like this ripoff, the European ripoff. Yeah, that's what it is.
Really, anything Ned related. You know, I sorely regret not growing up and having a friend like Ned.
The best thing is that Ned kind of like gets a lot of crap, but when you think about it, he does his job pretty well.
He's the guy in the chair.
But then that Night Monkey thing was brilliant.
Now, have you noticed that some of the things that we see in like the Arrowverse TV shows are more and more making their way into the superhero team as a standard? Like, you know, the guy tries to do the thing on his own and realizes he needs help, so he assembles the computer guy, the gear guy, the this guy, that guy, the secret police detective tie-in, that sort of thing. And you almost get that with his little student crew, don't you?
Well, it's in the media that you need other people to talk to, which is the reason that he had a suit he could talk to in the first one, is so that way the audience sees him interact. In comic books, we used to just have thought bubbles. Yeah. And that gave a way to interact with his audience.
But no, Walt, his student friends don't really serve in like that sort of Scooby Gang role. That only Ned.
Because it's Ned. They're all DNPCs, so they're not the Scooby Gang. They're the DNPCs.
They're very targets on their back.
Oh yeah, no, that was something else I really liked about the movie, because in past movies they kind of show you the DNPC depending on which movie, and they show it, but they always focus on one single DNPC, and they focus on it more as they focus on it as a romance aspect more than a DNPC aspect. In this movie, they show his complication from the comic books of the full DNPC tableau. This is what really happens when you have a DNPC. You don't need to be making kissy face with them when they get attacked. You don't need to be wanting to get with them, being on a date with them. No, if you have a DNPC, the GM will jack them whenever. Oh, we're just going to jack them up. And you better be ready to deal with that. And that's what the gang is there for, is to be the group of DNPCs. We're going to die in the horror movie.
I think it's great. The relationship of Flash and Peter.
Uh-huh.
And how much he loves Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I just seriously hope we get an Agent Venom, because I don't know what it is about that character, but I just love that character.
You'll enjoy the film. No disrespect, but honestly, the day that Venom comes to the MCU, that series is dead to me. I have always hated that character. I hate the aesthetic. Venom is the day that Spider-Man died for me. I have not bought a single Spider-Man comic since then, because I just think that's a character that totally just does not fit Peter or his universe at all.
Well, isn't that why Peter shed the suit? Because it didn't fit.
Yeah, and honestly, like the clone saga. Here's my dream Spider-Man story. Okay, the symbiote gets on the spider clone, and they are both destroyed on a subatomic level. And Galactus, Eternity, and the Beyonder all come out and go, "No bringing him back."
I'm sensing some negative affection for the characters of Venom and the clones.
Let Sony keep making Venom films for the people that really, 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 really need that. You know, I mean that's fine, but don't put that dark bullshit in that dark, stupid pre-image crap into the current series. No.
I wasn't talking about regular Venom. I was talking about like Agent Venom, the Flash Thompson comes back from war.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the character, and goodness knows that's a very well done comic. But you know, please tell me if I'm wrong, but you know, I don't come out of this movie thinking like, yeah, I can't wait till that kid goes off to war and gets his legs blown off. I mean that's a reality. I mean, yes, that's something that's going on. But can I just go to the movies every other July and not see people get their faces bitten off by blackface monsters and be reminded of all the things in the real world that make me want to go to the movies to forget about them for a couple of hours?
Right on. Have that light and fluffy superhero tale.
Yes.
I never read any of the Venom Venom-centric stuff. I only ever read Venom when Venom was Spider-Man's enemy and nemesis, and all these people turning him into this hero or this dark hero or this anti-hero. That's not my thing either, personally. I skipped the Venom movies completely because of that. And so
they're supposed to be really, really terrible is what I've heard. So
I have a few people that told me that's really good, But those are people that I know my feelings will not line up with. So we'll stick with that. But I also don't think that for the way that they have designed the current Flash, I don't see him being a military guy. Okay. I've known a lot of military guys in my lifetime. And Walt, when you see the way he's grown up and the way his hair and his attitude and just his general, the way he stands, you would not see him ever joining the military. He's one of those that the parents want them to join the military so that they will gain some discipline and wash out.
Yeah, everybody stands that way until you get your head shaved for the first time.
Yeah, well, maybe he could use some slapping around military, but the way that they have approached that character, that's not kind of a military kid.
So what's the next movie coming out as far as Marvel goes?
Well, they have not officially announced what are we up to? Phase 4?
Yeah.
Our November movie?
They have not officially announced what Phase 4 is going to be. They have James Gunn back for Guardians 3 and a script. There's production stills coming out for Black Widow.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on a wild limb and suggest there's going to be a Captain Marvel 2 and a Black Panther 2. Yeah. And I think the director of the first Doctor Strange has said that they're working on a sequel to that. So, but other than the production stills coming out for Black Widow, it's all just speculation and Twitter talk.
Yeah, I think Black Widow is the farthest along, certainly.
There are a few other things that are not actually like speculation and Twitter talk, but they haven't stated when these movies will come out because apparently the new Shang-Chi movie is confirmed. They've already cast half the cast. Mm-hmm. So we just don't, or at least half the cast, but so we don't know when that's coming out, but that is going to be coming up, Shang-Chi. And then they, I know that the speculation was for the,
The Eternals are supposed to be coming at some point.
Yeah, the Eternals are supposed to be coming at some point, but there's one other one I'm trying to think of right now.
Please tell me a Squirrel Girl.
No, they have.
There's a Morbius, I think, that's in the works, but that's not MCU.
Yes.
Yeah.
They officially announced last week that they are going to be reviving the humanoid TV show that failed dramatically, that flopped. They're going to be reviving
the Inhumans.
The Inhumans. They're going to be reviving the new Inhumans within the MCU rather than and so they're going to redo it, reboot it, but they're going to be using the MCU to do so. So we'll see if they're going to incorporate them into the actual movies or not. But the big announcement last week was that they are going to get a revival in the MCU. So,
well, I got a giant teleporting bulldog. I mean,
I know, it's so cute.
They just really, I think, need to establish that while the television MCU shows might operate in the same universe as the movies do not operate in the same universe as the television shows. Because they have never once wanted to really acknowledge them. And in Endgame, we had a moment that we could have had Clark Gregg and his team show up and all, and at least give them a little bit of a nod. I mean, Black Panther's army was there. Could we not have pulled few agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in?
Well, really, wouldn't Civil War have been, Winter Soldier have been the perfect time to integrate Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been. Well, we've had a nice good talk, and Walt needs to skedaddle. Apparently, he needs to wrangle us our runaway train.
Dogs in the tree.
Yep, in the tree. Yep. So, what? How do I
end up? Why can't I just end up with a teleporting bulldog so he can get himself out of his own tree?
I'm telling you, man. Bulldogs. Yeah. When you want a dog, but you don't want to do any of the actual dog stuff.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Well, adios, guys.
Cheers. Bye, everyone.